I'm very happy to welcome Paula Poundstone to the show. I have been a fan of her comedy for a long, long time, and my wife and I are really looking forward to seeing her when she comes back to St. Louis to do some stand-up at the Sheldon on February 9th. That's a week from, that's 2 weeks from this Saturday. And she's joining us on the phone now. Hi, Paula. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm very happy to have you on the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
As I mentioned, I've been a fan of yours for a very long time, and I want to ask if this is possible. Is it possible that I saw you 30 years ago at a comedy club in Boston, either Nick's Comedy Stop or the Comedy Connection?
It is absolutely possible. That's where I started out. And I started out about 33 years ago.
Okay, because I was working in Hartford, Connecticut in the early 80s, and we would go up to Boston whenever we could because Hartford is so boring. So, and we didn't have a comedy club, but they did. And what I've understood since then from talking to people like Dennis Leary and Lenny Clark and others who I guess were contemporaries of yours at the time was that it was a very, very exciting place to do comedy, but also a very tough place to do comedy.
Well, it was. There was a lot of... We were all young and stupid. That was part of it.
Yeah.
But it was. It was a great place. Boston was a terrific place. Lenny Clark sort of set the tone, I think, for what was popular, and because he was from there, and so a lot of his friends came out to see him, and therefore you were playing to an audience that were friends and fans of Lenny Clark, and so there was a certain style that he had. That I think what happened to a lot of people is they sort of patterned themselves after because it would work.
Yeah.
I, however, either didn't do that or didn't do it successfully. And therefore, it was sometimes kind of a rough place to work.
Lenny and I remember a couple of the other comedians who were there that night were very, very aggressive with the audience.
Yes.
And I know on a subsequent visit while I was there, I saw Stephen Wright. He also didn't kind of fit into that aggressive comedy. But you and Stephen both kind of got out of there and made your own way, right?
Yeah, but Stephen flourished when he was there as well. I mean, Stephen's so brilliant that he really had a, did he fit that bill stylistically? No, but people, found him and loved him anyways. I would say that I didn't have... quite the same acceptance level as Steve. I ended up taking a Greyhound bus around the country to see what clubs were like in different cities. And, I worked out at a handful of different places along the way. And then I ended up in San Francisco, where I stayed for, a longer period of time. And then I would go back and work in Boston. And eventually, it became a place where I did very well. But I would say in the beginning, it was... it was dicey.
That was also just before the comedy boom hit. Now there's a Funny Bone here in St. Louis that's kind of the part of the Funny Bone chain. There are improvs all over the place. For a while, there were Catch a Rising Stars all over the place, and every place had a ha-has or a hoo-hoos or a hee-hees I'm sure you had to work your way through. But at the beginning, when you got on that Greyhound bus, were you going to places where comedy wasn't really quite a mainstream thing yet?
Well, at that time... at that time, not everywhere had lots of clubs. Yeah. There were, handful of places that did, and they weren't generally those, they weren't those chains,
Yeah.
They weren't the franchised places. So, for example, there was a place in Chicago called Zany's that, it had singers and things like that, and then they started having stand-up comedy. It was a great place to work, mm-hmm. Just a great place to work. And there were a lot of really funny comics in Chicago. Eventually we all get sort of mixed together,
Yeah.
Eventually we all kind of, I have what I refer to as sort of a graduating class, of guys that I worked with everywhere, regardless of where we were, where we were from.
Who would be in that class?
Larry Miller, Dana Carvey, Steve Wright, Jack Gallagher, Jim Tingle, Kevin Pollak.
That's a pretty good class.
It's a pretty good class, yeah. Bob Goldthwait, yeah. A lot of We had a time of it. Yeah. It was I'm glad I was young. because it didn't matter where I slept, you know.
Yeah.
And that was helpful. That was, because some of the logistics were challenging sometimes.
What do you mean?
Well, I slept on Greyhound buses a lot.
Just to get to another gig?
Also, if I was in a place and I didn't have anywhere to stay, I had what was called an Ameripass, where you could go wherever you wanted for $150 for a month.
Uh-huh.
And so what I would do is I'd go to a city I wanted to be in, and I would at night find a place that was 4 hours away, and I would take the last bus out that went to that place. And then as soon as I got there, I'd turn around and get on the other bus coming back the other way. And this way I got my 8 hours.
You learned to sleep seated.
I did. That's the kind of plan you come up with when you're 19, you know.
And now you're on the road almost every weekend.
Yeah.
And I bet you were happy to hear the report last week that the TSA is getting rid of those nearly pornographic backscatter machines.
I was, although, you know, I'll tell you, Los Angeles was like the first place to have that. And I the first time I had to go and use that silly, stupid thing, I just went naked. And boy, do they hate that. It's like a power struggle, you know. The guy said, "You don't get you naked, we get you naked." They actually, the reason I, you know, A, the idea that they nobody would ever use those images for anything else is just ridiculous,
yeah,
ludicrous.
Right.
But also, I believe they were using more radiation than we should be exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly because I go through the airport, you know, multiple times per weekend, I just started saying I wouldn't go through those things. And then they always go, you're going to get the pat down, like it's some sort of punishment.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I kind of took the same approach, which is they would say, you're going to get the pat down. And I go, I know. Which made them very uncomfortable.
Well, did you ask for the extended pat down, Paula? Is that
what you're saying? Yeah. I go, yeah. Do you want it private? No. No. Do it right here.
Right here where everybody can see.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you do a good pat down, you're going to have a line behind me.
Maybe we can charge admission here.
You know, I don't know if they've ever stopped anybody from doing anything.
I don't either.
TSA, but it's certainly been a good employment project.
Yeah. You know, when I have gone through those machines, they always say, make sure you don't have anything in your pockets. And, of course, they've just made me take out my license and my boarding pass, and I've had to put those somewhere. And, of course, I usually just put it in my back pocket. And I think to myself, if this technology can't tell the difference between my driver's license and a bomb, what good is it?
Mm. Yeah, I actually lost my license last weekend for the first time.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because because I had taken it out of my pocket for the silly, stupid TSA.
Yeah.
But
and when you have to
listen,
fly all
I
the time.
I dare somebody to pretend to be me. They would crack like a ripe melon. They'd be begging to go back, like Tudor Turtle from the old cartoon. They would be begging to be put back to their regular life if they were me for even a few minutes.
Now, I'm curious about your traveling so much. You're on the road, as I said, virtually every weekend. You've got kids and a whole bunch of cats at home. Are you traveling to get away from them?
Well, you know, there are times where the notion has certainly passed through my head. I'll say, well, I don't have a booking, but I'll see what I can do this weekend. I'll just stand on a corner with a hat in St. Louis. That'll work.
Yeah.
It is a lot, but you know, every now and then I have to remind myself that, it's not like I got knocked up. You know, I adopted my children. I went through a process.
Yep.
It wasn't there's no accidental adoptions. And, and then, as far as the animals go, pretty much the same thing. You know, it's not like I woke up. People always say, oh, we had strays come to the house. No, I went out and got them.
Yes.
And therefore I created, a life that, is complex and busy. And there's sort of a cacophony of noise almost all the time. And I did it on purpose because I like it that way.
Mm-hmm.
There are days where I forget that. there are days where I somehow wake up and feel put upon. But then I have to remind myself that, no, I did this on purpose.
That's all the mouths of different sizes that want food in them.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you. For the first hour of my morning, I take care of, I'm like a farmer. I'm like a really unprofitable farmer. I don't have to get up quite as early as farmers. And, you know, if you don't milk a cat, they don't get sick.
That's right.
They don't back up on you. So.
Now, while we're speaking of food, you are well known on stage for having discussed Pop-Tarts in the past. And in fact, I want to play a piece of audio from, I believe it was an HBO special sometime in the 90s.
Could have been.
Okay. When it was one of the many times you've been on stage and people in the audience brought you Pop-Tarts. Let's listen.
I actually eat a box of Pop-Tarts a day. I'm not proud of that. It's a way to pack them. I think you see right here. Look, they have the tart right on the cover with the cross section. So you can see all the rich, tasty goodness right there. Well, I'm only human, for Christ's sakes. And look at this, you guys. Inside, let me just show you. Inside, there are three pouches of two. This is what happens to me. I open the first pouch and I eat one tart and I enjoy it very much, as naturally I would. And then I feel, well, I have to eat the second one or it will go stale. Well, now I've eaten two and it's no longer just a snack, it's a meal. I figure I may as well eat two more. And finally, I'm just like, well, hell, I don't just want two Pop-Tarts hanging out in a box. I eat the last two just to tidy up, really.
That's Paula Poundstone from a stand-up special she did on HBO in the 90s. And the reason I play that, Paula, is because about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the New York Times was doing a profile of Jerry Seinfeld. And in that profile, they were in his office, and they saw that he had some notes about things that he was working on. And the reporter asked him, what's this? And he said, oh, that's the thing I'm working on about Pop-Tarts. I've been working on it for 2 or 3 years. And I thought to myself, you can't go there. Paula's been there and has done Pop-Tarts over and over and over. You own the rights to the Pop-Tart concept at this point, as far as I'm concerned. Do you mind when somebody else is doing something like that or when you hear?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. My son got, about a, I don't know, 2 months ago now, my son got an infection that went to his brain.
Ooh.
And, you know, any brain infection jokes are mine now. Any youngest son, you know, life-threatening brain infection.
You own that.
Emergency surgery. That's mine.
Yeah.
I, you know. Yeah. And I, you know, yeah, Pop-Tarts. I was, the Chicago Tribune did a, they did a story about Pop-Tarts 1,000 years ago, and they had a timeline of Pop-Tart history, and my face is on that timeline.
Wow.
I have it laminated hanging on my living room wall.
Have you ever gotten any endorsement money from the Kellogg's people or heard from them?
I have not. They have not needed me, you know, because, you know, the product sells itself.
Yeah.
And so, no, they don't. They don't, you know. They don't. I know more about Pop-Tarts than the people who work at Kellogg's do by far.
Well, I don't think any humans have touched Pop-Tarts as much as you have.
I do eat them. I still eat them nearly every day. I take them on the road. I now have, because they changed the packaging, now they have 8 in a box because they didn't know what the hell they were doing. But because you don't have to eat 8. You have to eat 6 if they're in a box of 6. You don't have to eat 8.
Right.
But they now have these plastic containers that hold, you know, 2 tarts apiece.
Yes.
And I have a lot of those so that they don't break in my bag. And I was going through the TSA, actually. They say Pop-Tart right on the cover of them. They get like fake plastic icing, and it's a plastic, case. I'm going through the TSA. The guy stops me. He goes, what is this? And it says Pop-Tarts right on the cover. I said, well, it's Pop-Tarts. And he opens it up and sees it's Pop-Tarts. Well, okay. So So if I had anything other than Pop-Tarts in there, what was I going to say?
Yeah.
And what's this? I go, oh, Jesus, that's my heroin. Okay. Drop me.
That's my C4. That's the explosion. You found me.
Yeah. How did you do it? You guys are just unbeatable.
Do people still bring you Pop-Tarts at your shows? Will they be doing that when you come here to play the show?
They do still bring me Pop-Tarts at my shows, yes. And I, if it's the right flavor, I eat them.
Uh-huh. What flavor would you not eat?
Well, you know, the brown sugar and cinnamon frosted or the strawberry frosted, but I don't, people, you know, bring the s'mores and things like that. That's an area where Pop-Tarts really didn't know what they were doing.
Uh-huh.
No, it's just, you know.
They went off the rails. They had the perfect breakfast pastry and decided to go experimental.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they had to just push their luck.
It's like the M&Ms where you bite into it and inside is a pretzel instead of the delicious.
Oh, my God, I've had some of those. It was a reprehensible experience.
Yes.
Oh, it was horrible. Yeah, yeah. No, what could they be thinking?
You have the perfect product. Just sell that.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
You are known for interacting with your audience on stage quite a bit. You're improvising stuff with people. There are plenty of other comedians who've gotten on stage and started off with, hi, how are you? And they talk to the audience, and they don't handle it nearly as well as you.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. And I'm curious about how your interaction with them in social media is working, because I do follow you on Twitter, at Paula Poundstone. Not that I'm stalking you in any way, but I wonder how social media has affected your relationship with your fans.
It's great, actually. I like, I like being in touch with the people that come to see me. I also do I sell CDs at my shows, and so I come out and sign afterwards, and I always tell people they don't have to buy something in order to come say hello or take a picture or whatever.
Yeah.
Because I like, kind of completing that circle. I like knowing who comes to see me. I like knowing, what they do for a living and where they've been, it's very, very nice. And the Twitter thing is certainly, I like thinking of something that I think is funny and posting it a couple of times a day as well. But, I think that the Twitter thing has been a nice addition. Sometimes I feel like a slave to it, but a lot of times it's just a nice addition.
Has that been helpful in you conceiving concepts for what is eventually going to end up on stage?
No. It really hasn't. It's odd how it hasn't.
I asked that question in the hopes that, okay, here we go. Here's an example coming up. Paula's going to tell us something she tweeted, and then it became a 10-minute bit on stage, but no.
No, it really, there's something about, narrowing stuff to that, 140 character thing,
yeah.
That, it kind of, that's where it lives and dies.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you. There are a couple of seats still available for Saturday, February 9th at the Sheldon here in St. Louis to see the great Paula Poundstone in person. And, of course, she also appears on another radio show, a certain quiz thing that NPR does every weekend. Wait. Don't tell me. And regular panelists there, and always terrific on that. It's a pleasure having a conversation with you here today. I look forward to seeing you.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Paula Poundstone here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS.